Hi, this is Andrew, and this is movie night. I guess I come to you in just madness. I can't believe it sometimes. What do I watch every day for my entertainment? Like, what do I do with my casual time? As a citizen in this society, what do I like to do? I like to go to the movies. That's what I always like to do. Didn't always have to be the best thing in the world, you know? Doesn't always have to be. Like the good and the bad. That's the way you can judge the good, is by seeing the bad. Do I ever get to see anything good? Well, yeah, sometimes if I have the time for it. But what I'm watching, what I'm being presented as a consumer, it just doesn't make it. It doesn't fit the bill. It's starting to reach that level where literally, I don't know if you've seen the movie Idiocracy, but it's headed there. It really is. And I'm gonna intersperse some comments by Steven Soderbergh. You guys probably know who he is. Aaron Brockovich, Traffic, won Best Director for that. Started out in independent cinema. One of the early movies from Miramax, actually, before they were bought by Disney. And then, of course, the Weinsteins have gone on their own and started up the Weinstein Company, but that's another story. But anyway, yeah, I'll intersperse some clips from Steven Soderbergh here because, pretty amazing. Actually, it's from the 56th Annual San Francisco Film Festival, and he gave an address entitled The State of Cinema.
Now we finally arrive at the subject of this rant, which is the state of cinema. First of all, is there a difference between cinema and movies? Yeah. If I were on Team America, I'd say, fuck yeah. The simplest way that I can describe it is a movie is something you see, and cinema is something that's made. And it has nothing to do with the capture medium. It doesn't have anything to do with where the screen is, whether it's in your bedroom, your iPad. It doesn't even really have to be a movie. It can be a commercial. It can be something on YouTube. Cinema is a specificity of vision. It's an approach in which everything matters. It's the polar opposite of generic or arbitrary. And the result is as unique as a signature or a fingerprint. And it isn't made by a committee, and it isn't made by a company, and it isn't made by the audience. It means that if this filmmaker didn't do it, it either wouldn't exist at all, or it wouldn't exist in anything like this form. So, that means you can take a perfectly solid, successful, acclaimed movie, and it may not qualify as cinema. It also means you can take a piece of cinema, and it may not qualify as a movie, and it may actually be an unwatchable piece of shit. But as long as you have filmmakers out there who have that specific point of view, then cinema's never going to disappear completely, because it's not about money. It's about good ideas followed up by a well-developed aesthetic. And I love all this new technology. It's great. Smaller, lighter, faster. You can make a really good-looking movie for not a lot of money. And whenever people start to get weepy about celluloid, I think of this quote by Orson Welles when somebody was talking to him about new technology, which he tended to embrace. And he said, "I don't want to wait on the tool. I want the tool to wait for me," which I thought was a good way to put it. But the problem is that cinema, as I define it, and as something that inspired me, is under assault by the studios, and from what I can tell, with the full support of the audience. The reasons for this, in my opinion, are more economic than philosophical, but when you add an ample amount of fear and a lack of vision and a lack of leadership, you've got a trajectory that I think is pretty difficult to reverse. Now, of course, it's very subjective. There are going to be exceptions to everything I'm going to say, and I'm just saying that so no one thinks I'm talking about them. And I want to be clear, The idea of cinema, as I'm defining it, is not on the radar of the studios. Like, this is not a conversation anybody's having. It's not a word you would ever want to use in a meeting. And, you know, speaking of meetings, I mean, the meetings have gotten pretty weird. There are fewer and fewer executives who are in the business because they love movies. There are fewer and fewer executives that know movies. So it can become a very strange situation. I mean, I know how to drive a car, but I wouldn't presume to sit in a meeting with an engineer and tell him how to build one. And that's kind of what you feel like when you're in these meetings. You've got people who don't know movies, don't watch movies for pleasure, deciding what movie you're going to be allowed to make. And that's one reason studio movies aren't better than they are, and it's one reason that cinema, as I'm defining it, is shrinking.
So yeah, basically what he's describing, his definition of cinema is correct, down from the earliest moving image in the earliest movies, motion pictures, that started this whole thing. I mean, that is the definition of cinema. And I think one of the reasons why it's gotten to that place is that film criticism just plays such a little part in our lives nowadays. And I'm not talking about the people who really follow stuff. Like, if you really follow it, it's there. It is out there if you follow it. If you look at anything even halfway decently, you'll be able to find something if you really research it. But, you know, to the average Joe, you know, who walks in and goes into a movie theater and pays their money, you know, who takes the time out of their day to go and do that, I know a guy who works at Bath Iron Works. He's a coworker of mine. And he's this great dude. He's, you know, he's a working class guy. He's a regular Joe, you know. He likes to see a good movie. And he likes his cheese a little bit, you know. He likes to kind of go Chuck Norris-y a little bit with the action. But that's what he likes, you know. And that's cool. That's his little niche that he kind of likes. Everybody has that. Minor cheesy horror movies. Or at least good ones. Halfway decent. But to the average Joe who walks in and just wants to see a good movie, plain and simple, we can't even produce on that level. And that's really sad. That's really sad. And it gives cinema a bad name, you know? You see some of the stuff up on the screen and it's like, why would I ever pay my hard-earned money to see this? You know, you have to wait for the good movies, because if you're someone who falls halfway decently, you can find something that's, you know, not going to feel like a waste of time. But we're seeing that more and more go on television. Television, of course, where everybody's flocking in the industry, because everyone's staying home. There's nothing out there to watch. There's nothing on that screen that makes it worth to go out there for the average person. And the system is so broken that because the films now have to become so homogenized to appeal to an audience, I mean, I don't know how many of you people know this, but the foreign market makes up 70% of a movie's growth now, usually. And that's a sign, obviously, of the economy and how things are going here in the U.S. You know, it's our third biggest export, last time I checked, I think. But that's why staying at home has become so convenient, and people aren't going to the theater is because they just don't see a reason to, you know. Attendance is down for a reason, and it's because no new voices are getting in to even the higher movies now, these huge blockbusters. So the quality of them goes down and no one sees a reason to go. And even the more specialty stuff, you know, it doesn't have to be low budget, but, you know, these middle-of-the-road movies, these $30, $40 million movies, that if you look at these budgets, guys, of some of these movies that are, like, you know, some of the most loved and treasured, you know, for years on, huge parts of our culture, yeah, you'll see a few huge ones, but mostly they were modestly budgeted, you know? And where are people watching that stuff? At home. So I'll play another clip here.
So then there's the expense of putting a movie out, which is a big problem. point of entry for a mainstream wide release movie, $30 million. That's where you start. Now you add another 30 for overseas. Now you gotta remember, the exhibitors take half of the gross. So to get that 60 back, you've gotta gross 120. Now, so that's, you don't even know what your movie is yet, and you're already looking at 120. So that ended up being part of the reason why the Liberace movie didn't happen at a studio. We only needed $5 million from a domestic partner. But when you add the cost of putting a movie out, now you're talking about you've got to gross $70 million to get that 35 back. And the feeling, I think, amongst the studios was this material was too special to gross $70 million. So the obstacle here isn't just that special subject matter, but it's that nobody has figured out how to reduce the cost of putting a movie out. I think there have been some attempts to sort of analyze it, but one of the mysteries is that this analysis doesn't really reveal any kind of linear predictive behavior. It's still kind of mysterious, the process by which people decide to either go to a movie or not go to a movie.
And again, that's sort of what I was talking about, which is, you know, because this country became, let's face it, the leader in producing entertainment for, you know, even the rest of the world, it became our benchmark. You know, it was still a part of America, you know? It's just part of that thing. Like, you say that, you know, baseball is America's pastime. So were the movies. I mean, you gauge our culture, what we had in the past, these people up on the screen would teach you a lot about, you know, how to be a man and what to do, and it told you things you didn't know about the world, and it kind of made you excited. You know, that's gone. If you talk about what I'm being presented with at my local multiplex, okay? Once in a while, something that's halfway interesting. If you have the money, you'll check it out. But usually these movies, the ones that you hear a few weeks down the road, like, I want to go check this out. This is great. You should see this. Like, you know, Boyhood, whatnot. Things like that. Things that could cross over to a mainstream audience. That movie would be huge right now. I mean, IFC Films has it. Paramount's bought the DVD rights, which pissed a lot of us off because we all thought it was going to Criterion, actually. So, yeah. But that's one of the other names in the game, you know, distribution. So maybe IFC Films is getting a little bit of money from the home video department because disc is failing. You know, movies on disc are failing. That's really sad. Like, I want to put stuff on my shelf sometimes, you know? If I like a movie a whole lot, I'll buy it and I'll put it on my shelf. And, you know, people still want that because they're buying the films they want to buy, you know, the films. I mean, I know a lot of video on demand stuff now. Obviously, there's a lot of rentals, but there are some purchases too. People want to keep this movie so they can watch it whenever they want. And I believe some people are still old school enough that they'd like to have a copy of that, you know. It's like, it's sort of displaying what you like in a way, like books and whatnot. That's why there's still people who like print, who like that. But the studios have had to cut everything at all costs. You know, even though they're doing really well, I mean, digital distribution took off like crazy. It would be so much easier with digital distribution. But, of course, there's this, you know, core group that still kind of wants to do that. But they've had to cut their home video units and stuff like that because of that. So, I mean, the whole studio structure is really just collapsing underneath everything. I mean, pretty soon I won't be able to buy a physical copy of a movie that I want to have. It'll just be a digital file, you know? But anyway, here's more Steven.
But unfortunately, the only way a studio is going to allow that kind of freedom to a young filmmaker is if the budgets are low. And unfortunately, the most profitable movies for the studios are the big movies, the home runs. You know, they don't look at the singles and the doubles as being worth the money or the man hours. And psychologically, it's more comforting to spend $60 million promoting a movie that cost $100 than it does to spend $60 million promoting a movie that cost $10. Now, I know what you're probably thinking, oh, but you know, if it costs $10, you're gonna be in profit sooner. Maybe not, here's why. Okay, $10 million movie, $60 million to promote it, that's 70, so you gotta gross 140 to get out. Now you got a $100 million movie, you're gonna spend 60 to promote it, you gotta get 320 to get out. How many $10 million movies make $140 million? Not many. How many $100 million movies make 320? A pretty good number. And there's a sort of domino effect that happens too. Bigger home video sales, bigger TV sales. So you can see the forces that are sort of draining in one direction in the business.
So, like I said, he even says it right there with the home video stuff. I forgot what he said in this clip, so actually that was kind of funny. Good segue. But yeah, it's just trickling down and it's just not working. It's trickling down to every department. And, you know, it also doesn't help that you have these companies. I mean, you know, it started out with the Big Five and it's changed now over the years. I won't give you a history lesson, but I mean, you know, you have these studios who are the big studios. I mean, you can be a studio and just, well, okay, on the basic level, I guess I'll start at the bottom. You can have studio space and all you're doing is you're renting out studio space for a production company to make a movie. That's what it's about, where you put your sets, your stages, all that stuff. So the production company can be anyone. They can be the actual studio that owns the studio space. They can also be producing the movie as a production company. So, on its most basic level, that's what a studio is. That's what's become to be known as what a studio is, because basically, you've always wanted to be a part of one, because they're always making movies, they're always making material. That's where you want to get. You have some sort of guarantee of a paycheck at the end of the day. Or, of course, either a production company as well, not just a studio, but a production company that was functioning and doing well and making money off their movies. That was the chain. That's how it all went down. And it really makes me sad when I see these people that, you know, they break out, like, they get some huge deal and they get a show on HBO or something. You know, like Lena Dunham, like her or hate her, whatever. She made a film really cheaply, immediately went and did a deal with HBO because she saw total creative freedom. Somebody like Judd Apatow was behind her, who really had a great track record with sort of weird, little different shows like Freaks and Geeks, whatnot. And, you know, if she did well enough in the ratings, she could do whatever she wanted. That was probably the deal given to her, right? But it's really sad to me to see when, like, somebody reaches that level and, you know, she's a filmmaker from my generation who reached that level. Your responsibility is to speak out, you know. And I haven't seen anything in the press about this at all. You know, she's on the cover of whatever it was, whatever magazine that was. And they made a huge big deal about it. The photos and all this stuff. Whatever, right? Well, that's a big opportunity to, you know, really express yourself at that point. Why not make some big statement there, if that's really what you're about? I'm sure she was given many reasons not to, you know, that's probably why. But why not at that point stand up and say, you know, I wanted to make movies, but after I made this one, I got an offer with HBO that I could do whatever I wanted, and I knew it was better to go to TV because that was the only option. But I wanted to make movies, and I did this instead because I knew that this would be the greatest option if I wanted to keep my vision intact. You know, I never heard any of this stuff from her. And, you know, the film criticism that we're getting, I think it was really kind of prophetic when Roger Ebert died, because he was still, you know, like I said, it goes from the top all the way to the bottom. It's just like, you know, whatever it is. The most random, you know, action movie in the movie theater, you know, big blockbuster, you know, to the average Joe, a guy that he could look to say, yeah, you know, I know it sounds dumb, and I know it sounds like this, you know, some people will hate me for the idea of film criticism with this, you know, but, and will say that they, you know, because they went mainstream, they sold out and all this stuff, but whatever, Siskel and Ebert, you know, they could at least tell you, you know, basically, how good is this thing? Should you see it? You know? And I'm not really talking about the thumbs thing. I'm talking about the whole idea of the conversation, and the people would watch that conversation. And if they were still alive, it probably would have gone to the web. That's where they would have gone next. They would have gone to the web, and that would have been the next hub, and that hasn't quite happened yet, and hopefully at some point it does. But yeah, people would sit down and take, you know, 25 minutes out of their day and watch a show that went through all the movies they'd seen that week. These two guys obviously know what they're talking about. They give their honest opinion in detail. They talk about why they liked it, why they didn't. You can kind of say, well, yeah, he didn't like it, but the other guy did. And, you know, I kind of want to see a cheesy movie, and the other one said it was cheesy, and that's why he liked it. So, you know what? I'm going to go see it. You know what I mean? The basic idea of that, you know, they could dissect further, of course, into better and deeper stuff and whatever, but you know what I mean? They could take it from the most basic level of, like, you know, this is a good action movie. If you want to see something like this, check it out. But they could also go and give attention to a smaller movie that may be doing pretty good, but because it goes wide, they can talk about it, because the studio gave it that extra chance and pushed it a little further. They put their stamp of approval on it, and it was something that meant something, you know? And that's just, it's really sad. More Steven Soderbergh.
I do think that what people go to the movies for has changed since 9/11. I still think the country is in some form of PTSD about that event, and that we haven't really healed in any sort of complete way, and that people are, as a result, looking more toward escapist entertainment. And look, I get it. There's a very good argument to be made that only somebody who has it really good would want to make a movie that makes you feel really bad. People are working longer hours for less money these days, and maybe when they go to the movie, they want a break. I get it. But let's sex this up with some more numbers. In 2003, 455 films released. 275 of those were independent, 180 were studio films. Last year, 677 films released. So you're not imagining things. There are a lot of movies opening every weekend. 549 of those were independent, 128 were studio films. So a 100% increase in independent films and a 28% drop in studio films. And yet, 10 years ago, studio market share 69%, last year 76%. So you got fewer studio movies now taking up a bigger piece of the pie, and you've got twice as many independent films scrambling for a smaller piece of the pie. That's hard. That's really hard. I mean, when I was coming up making an independent film and trying to reach an audience, I thought was sort of like trying to hit a thrown baseball. This is like trying to hit a thrown baseball with another thrown baseball. And that's why I'm spending so much time talking to you about the business and the money, because this is the force that is pushing cinema out of mainstream movies. And you know, I've been in meetings where I can feel it slipping away, where I can feel like the ideas that I'm tossing out are, I don't know, they're too scary or they're too weird, and I can feel the thing, it's just, I can tell, like, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to be able to convince them to do this the way I think it should be done. And I want to jump up on the table and scream and go, do you know how lucky we are to be doing this? Do you understand that the only way to repay that karmic debt is to make something good, is to make something ambitious, something beautiful, something memorable?
So, yeah, I totally agree. And that's how I felt kind of when I started this, but I feel better now that I've talked through it. But, yeah, I mean, hey, I consider myself a movie buff. You know, I know a lot of stuff. You know, quite a bit, more than most people, but there are people I know more about it than me. I'm not saying that, but, you know, I consider myself above average, okay, on this front. But even down to the basic idea of, let's go out and see a movie, it'll be fun, okay? It's hard to get that content into theaters more. Because these new voices are having such a hard time breaking through to be able to get on that screen, and that's why movie theaters are dying, and that's why attendance is down, and that's why going to the movie theater might pretty soon be a thing of the past. And that really scares me. I don't want that to happen. I don't want that to happen at all. Because you have to look at, really, you know, when you go through the distribution pattern and it comes down to the theaters at the very end, people have to distribute these movies. Okay, who are the biggest distributors? You know, studios, obviously, but you have smaller guys who can get in there. Well, how are they going to be able to get that movie on that screen if there's no theater that's going to show it? Because all they have to show is these huge extravaganzas, because it makes sense. I mean, they are scared, obviously. They have no idea what they're doing. As Steve was saying, the people there continually just don't know movies who are running these things. It saddens me too with some of these studios, like Universal. I'm not saying all their movies are bad at all. I'm just saying, you know, used to be one of my favorite studios, you know. Even when they were one of the smaller three, they weren't one of the big five, they were one of the smaller three. And, you know, through some of that period, they made, I always liked them because they would make they'd give Spike Lee a little money every few years, and they'd go make a movie, and they'd make a little money back on it, and yeah, it was cool, you know what I mean? And now he has to go to Kickstarter, whether you like that or not, or whatever. It's just, you know, the idea of getting enough money to make a movie of a certain size, because how are you going to distribute it? How are you going to get it on the screen? If you want to see your movie on the screen, what do you have to do? And there's just no opportunity to do that anymore, because it's so hard to get that quality up on the screen. And there is that. I mean, you know, you have your smaller theaters, but, you know, they're not doing that well. Piracy is a problem, ironically, sometimes for the smaller films, because they're usually sometimes a more sophisticated audience, and so, you know, sometimes they have shown categorically to have more money usually. You know, it's the older adult audience that likes these things. And no, I'm not talking about, you know, these, not necessarily talking about an independent film, what would be called nowadays, or even a movie from a specialty house, like Focus, or anything like that. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about, you know, Miramax had Dimension, and Dimension made Scream, and Scream was on the movie screen. It was in the theater. When was the last time you saw a good horror movie in the theater, guys, with Halloween coming up? When's the last time? That's the best way to see a horror movie, and horror nowadays, mostly, has been relegated to, you know, video on demand, stuff like that. And there's no compass, there's no critical compass there saying, you know, even for something like that, like, hey, you know what, it wasn't the best thing in the world, but I jumped a few times, I gotta admit, you know? You know, it was kind of creepy, you know, that kind of thing. But this is what needs to happen if they want to save it all, if they want to save everything. Basically, one or two things needs to happen. The studios need to, despite how much money it costs, if they really want to save the theater owners, which, of course, everybody I should mention are separate. Theater owners, whole different side of it. Court ruling, actually, early on, ruled that the studios could not own theaters, which kind of makes sense, doesn't it? They can't control what you're seeing. Makes sense, huh? But with the studios, it's just so hard. I mean, you see, you know, some of these movies with, you know, Universal, and it's like, why would I ever trust a company now that is part of NBC and NBC's Comcast, and, you know, it just on and on and on. I mean, all of these studios were just eaten up by so many of these other companies that it homogenized everything. I mean, people forget that at one time, Columbia Pictures was owned by Coke. And, you know, I gotta admit, they made some guilty pleasure 80s stuff. But if you look at Columbia Pictures output in the 80s, aside from, you know, some decent stuff like Stand By Me and whatnot, they would have a lot of these, you know, cheesy things, you know, from Columbia. And I think that was kind of an influence from Coke. I mean, all this stuff does that, and people just don't realize it. So, here's Steve again.
But I don't want to, you know, bring this to a conclusion on a down note. A few years back, I got a call from an agent. He said, look, will you come see this film? It's a little small independent film a client of mine made. It's been making the festival circuit. It's been getting a really good response, but no distributor will pick it up. And I really would just like you to take a look at it and tell me what you think. The film is called Memento. So the lights come up and I go, all right, it's over. Nobody will buy this film and release it. This is insane. It's over. The movie, but it's just over. It was really upsetting. Well, fortunately, the people who financed the movie loved the movie so much, they formed their own distribution company and put the movie out and made $25 million. So whenever I despair, I think, okay, somebody out there somewhere, while we're sitting right here, somebody out there somewhere is making something cool that we're going to love, and that keeps me going.
So yeah, there you go. I mean, Memento. Christopher Nolan, Dark Knight Trilogy. If you like it, you did, you don't, whatever. But, you know, inarguably, those were better than usual superhero movies. I mean, The Dark Knight was a huge event because you knew it was going to be at least good, so you'd probably see it. You know? And I think this guy almost didn't make it through. Because the company that produced the film couldn't get it released. Couldn't get anyone to buy it. So that's what I think needs to happen. Either one of two things. The studios start taking more chances. I don't care how much it costs. Yeah, you may have a couple bombs there, but you got to make a statement and put the money behind these $30, $40 million movies. Get them made. Do them, you know. You're going to have breakout hits. It's going to be hits and misses. But take a chance. And the second thing is, if that doesn't happen, people really need to hardcore start great distribution chains. You know, like some of these people, like Megan Ellison with Annapurna Pictures. I mean, yes, I'm sure she got the money from her dad. I don't know a whole lot about it, but I know that her dad's the richest man in California. And she's his daughter. So, anyway, yeah, she financed these pictures, but she financed a Paul Thomas Anderson movie, The Master. She's financing all these pictures who, you know, the makers of these films are up for awards every year. And not just, you know, the biggest ones, but the smaller ones, too. The stuff that people really look at. Megan Ellison and people like that are going to have to start to distribute the films themselves. And luckily, it's become so much easier now with digital projection. That's the one positive about all of this. And it's so funny to me that I know you guys mean well. I know, you know, like Tarantino and stuff, you guys mean well by all the stuff you're saying. But, you know, it's on its last breath, the idea of going to a movie theater. And if digital projection is what it takes to keep that alive, then okay. If people still go to the fucking movies, they'll still go in, pay, and sit there and watch something, you know, halfway decent. If you can save that with digital projection, then sure, you know. And they're going to have to start spending money, you know, prints and advertising, and releasing these films, like, wide, and doing that, and just breaking into that system. That's the only way, because it's broken. And, yeah. I guess that's all I have to say about that. But no, something really needs to happen, because it doesn't look good. If you like movies, it doesn't look good. What can you do as the average viewer? Well, you can, it's my PSA moment, but you can vote with your dollar. I mean, honestly, if there's nothing at your local multiplex that you have any interest in seeing whatsoever, don't go. If a movie pops up on video on demand that you want to see, rent that instead. And, you know, the studios will eventually catch on. You know, it does sound like they're incredibly stupid, and in some ways they really are. But they will catch on with the fact that, wait a second, these movies, some of these lower budget movies, wow, they're actually making some money. You know, that, you know, it can happen. It's, you know, it'd have to become a huge movement, but yeah, just vote with your dollar. If you don't, if you're looking to go to the movies on the weekend, and you know, you look at your local multiplex, there's really nothing you'd want to see in there, but you know, I 15 to half hour drive or something to another theater is playing a movie that looks a little more interesting, then take the drive, go there. Even though some of you young people, and I know I know it's tempting, but even though there might be an Oscar screener or something of it on there, okay, and I know the big Oscar contenders and everything really don't need the money, but when, you know, I know, I've been on the torrent sites, I know, when you see, you know, the, I'm not admitting anything, I'm just saying I've seen what's on the websites, I've seen the screeners that go up of every possible movie, and they're movies that usually don't get nominated for Oscars as well. There's that many up there all the time. There's a lot of screeners that go up around Oscar season. Don't do it. Okay? Just, you know, a lot of the younger people do that too, because, especially around that time, because it, you know, by the time the movie gets to your city, it's Oscar season, and it's easy to just do that, but just don't do it. Pay with your dollar, even if it's not in the theater. Pay the VOD, rent the movie, just do it that way. And then they'll eventually realize, oh, maybe we need to make more movies in this price range because they make money. It sounds incredibly stupid, but it will work, I promise you. So as a viewer, that's what you can do. Vote with your dollar. Vote with your dollar. And now, on that note, I will steal Roger Ebert's line. This is Andrew, and I'll see you at the movies.